I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today we're proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is streamed live on the City of Melbourne's website, and an audio and video recording will also be published on the Council website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we try to avoid filming members of the public who attend or present at this meeting, there's the possibility that your image may be inadvertently captured in the live stream and video recording. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. Given that this is a special meeting of the Future Melbourne Committee, in accordance with the Council's conduct of meetings local law, unless all councillors are present and unanimously agree to deal with another matter, only the business specified in the notice is to be transacted. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises two reports from management, and apologies have been received from Lord Mayor Sally Capp and Councillor Leppett. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code. In relation to Agenda Item 3.1, consideration of submissions and matters arising on the Draft 2019-2020 Annual Plan and Budget, Paul Sinclair from the Parkfield Cricket Club, Liam Smith, Thomas Crabtree from the Royal Park Brunswick Cricket Club, Tanya Lee, Cindy Lee from the Melbourne University Lacrosse Club, Christian Bianchi from the Melbourne University Soccer Club, Tony Penner from the South Bank Residents Association, Pauline Taylor from Carlton Gardens Tennis Club, and Jen Holling, University of the Third Age. Over 60 written submissions were received and will be noted in the minutes. In relation to Agenda Item 3.2, consideration of submissions and matters arising on the proposed amendments to the 2017-2021 Council Plan, there's been an item of correspondence from Mark Collins. Is there anyone that I've missed there that wanted to make a submission tonight? No? Thank you. I advise submitters that you'll have 3 minutes to address us at the relevant time that you're called. It's the intention of the committee to adhere to the three-minute time limit. There's a counter up on the clock there to assist you, and just refer to that. Beeps will sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you've got 1 minute to conclude your address, and another beep will sound to signal that your time allocated has finished. I'll continue in the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the finance and governance portfolio. There's two reports from management for consideration under the finance and governance portfolio. Agenda item 3.1 is the consideration of submissions and matters arising on the draft 2019-2020 annual plan and budget. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? If no, I would call on Paul Sinclair, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. Paul Sinclair, are you present? No, there you go. I now call on Tony Penner, who requested the opportunity to speak early in the program because he's got to dash very quickly. Tony.
Thank you. Okay, where do I start? Only 3 minutes. Firstly, I'm confused. In our submission, we got a response from council officers saying that there was $5 million investment in the city road. Yet, personally, I can only find mention in the budget of $500,000, which I believe is for a dog park. Please tell me where the line item is for the other $4.5 million, because I certainly couldn't find it. Anyway, this project, City Road, is what I'm here to talk about mainly. It's 3 years behind schedule. Well, it will be. We secured three commitments in this forum last year. One of those, and they were all in resolutions, one of them was to put forward to the 2019-20 Capital Works Budget completion of all aspects of the City Road Master Plan design documentation that has not yet been implemented, noting Council's intention to begin major works on City Road Master Plan Action 1 in 1920. Clearly, that's not happening. It seems it hasn't been achieved. We also had resolution 1.1.5, which is the inclusion of a further $500,000 in the capital works budget to fund the City Road signalised pedestrian crossings. It certainly appears that I haven't seen those pedestrian crossings, and I certainly haven't read or heard of any of the works for those last year. And if it has, I can be forgiven for thinking that it hasn't, because our third commitment was to update or replace the Shape Your South Bank online portal with detailed information regarding the progress of all South Bank major projects included therein, and ensure this information is communicated electronically with the residents, the South Bank residents, community groups and stakeholders by the end of July 2018. So if it was done, it certainly wasn't put into that document as the resolution stated this time last year was meant to happen. You'll recall clearly the big issue that I was making last year was all about communication, or lack thereof, I should say. Hence, that was why that resolution came about. There's been no update to the City Road project since the master plan was released. They did create a South Bank projects page, but like I said, that document hasn't been updated, and it didn't get communicated to us. We found out about it only after we inquired about 3 months after the financial year. I'm hearing that there's a lot of work going on in South Bank, and that could be one of the reasons why it's delayed. All of these projects are identified within the master plan timeline as running concurrently. If anything, the two-year delay that we've got on this project should be working in its favour. Talk about CityLink Void. That was in the 2008 South Bank plan, the 2010 structure plan. In 10 years, we haven't had any discussion on this. There hasn't been any funding allocated to even cost that to determine the feasibility of it. We requested some funding to do that this year. That seems to have been, well, we've been told that there's no funding for that for the next 4 years. You know, South Bank residents are starting to feel like mugs with the secrecy of this council, with communication with the project.
Thanks,
and how it's proceeding. Some communication is all
Thanks,
we're
Tony.
Asking for.
Cheers. And we don't intend to respond to each submitter as we go through. We will respond in the debate, though, if you're still here, Tony. No, you're off? Excellent. Thanks for attending. I now call on Liam Smith to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Liam Smith, are you here? No. I now call on Thomas Crabtree. Excellent. Thanks, Thomas. You've got 3 minutes.
Thanks all for having us tonight. So I'm from Royal Park Brunswick Cricket Club, and speaking to the money that was announced in the draft budget for the redevelopment of Western Pavilion, Ryder and Brens. I've obviously haven't been at the club for as long as plenty of people have, but they've been fighting for a long time to get our rooms upgraded. And so there's a bit of spring in the step from the thinking there might be on the way. Just to touch on a few of the issues that are currently at our club rooms. There's currently no female facilities whatsoever. There's no female bathroom. There's no female showers. We only have two change rooms. So we have four sides on a Saturday playing at our ground. So that doesn't fit. We've been trying pretty hard recently to start a women's side. There's a new league in our competition. And it's pretty hard to get one off the ground where there's nowhere for anyone to get changed or go to the bathroom on a Saturday, let alone training or whatnot. And then further to that, Cricket Australia have guidelines around what they require for a clubhouse to have. I think that we tick the boxes on about 30% of the various things, and a lot of that includes the change room facilities, obviously, enclosed bathrooms rather than urinals, open showers, which is currently the situation. And then moving on from that, we talk about the quality of the space. The kitchen, there's no ventilation, there's no windows, there's no ability to watch the sport from the pavilion whatsoever. I know obviously where they're in the summer, it gets quite hot with no ventilation, no ability to open a window, and it's quite outdated. A lot of people would say that it looks like a toilet block. Regularly we have people that turn up and think, oh, taxi drivers pull in to go to the bathroom on their shift because they think that's what it is. And given the lack of the quality of the improvements, it's sort of it's a little bit outdated and it lacks a lot of safety measures as well. It's sort of hard to see. I know we've been robbed a couple of times on a Saturday because someone leaves a door unlocked and it's so far away from the ovals and you can't see in and out. And so there's been a couple of instances where people have had things stolen, including one guy's car. So we're really excited. There's a real spring in the step around the club and we're looking forward to hopefully moving forward over the next 12 months and be excellent that if it went forward and then money for the actual development in the coming years, that'd be great. So thanks very much for your time. Mm-hmm. Cheers.
Excellent. Thanks, Thomas. I now call on Cindy Lee. Cindy? Thanks, Cindy. You've got 3 minutes.
We are Cindy and Nick from Melbourne University Lacrosse Club. Our club strongly supports the City of Melbourne's planned boost for recreation and community facilities outlined in the draft annual plan and budget. This includes the plan to redevelop Western Oval Pavilion.
Melbourne Uni Lacrosse Club is a long-standing winter tenant of Western Oval and Pavilion in the Royal Park North District. We were established in 1883 and we're currently the oldest continually running lacrosse club in the world. Our member base consists of 100 people, ranging from 10 to 55 years old, and we're proud to be an inclusive, community-minded club of females and males, which is open to everyone, not just university students.
The current state of the pavilion is not conducive to the promotion of active lifestyles and overall physical and mental health and well-being. We would like the pavilion to be a welcoming and inviting place for our sporting communities. However, being located some 50 metres from the field with no heating and no viewing windows, it does not promote a community vibe for our members, spectators and volunteers. Additionally, the nature of lacrosse means that bulky and heavy items such as goals are required to be carried long distances onto the field and from the small storage space which is located at the back of the pavilion.
Our strong endorsement of this draft plan and budget is in one part due to the necessity for the upgrades to meet the needs of the changing sporting demographic. Our club has had a significant number of female participants for a long time, which the pavilion does not accommodate. There is a single mixed-use female/disabled toilet, showers that are unisex with no cubicle doors, and there is a large urinal in one of the main bathrooms. This current facility does not reflect the core value of gender inclusivity that the City of Melbourne actively promotes. Thus, we strongly support the potential for gender equal facilities.
Our members are acutely aware of the recent horrendous incidents around the Royal and Princess Park area, which highlights the dire need for upgrades to ensure the pavilion is a safe place. The significant concern for the safety arises because the pavilion is situated in a poorly lit area of the park, and our training sessions are in the dark hours of the winter months. Our members have expressed concern moving between the oval and the pavilion and then leaving the pavilion at night due to the lack of lighting, surveillance and isolation from neighbouring property. There is a great opportunity to address this in the redesign process proposed.
Thanks for allowing us the time. Congratulations on the proposal and we hope to see this come to fruition in the near future for the benefit of the community. Thanks.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks, Nick. I now call on Tanya Lee to address the committee. Tanya, are you here? No? Christian. Christian Bianchi. Thanks, Christian. You've got 3 minutes. Welcome.
Christian couldn't make it. It's actually Lachlan Boughton, but...
Welcome, Lachlan.
Thank you. On behalf of Melbourne University Soccer Club, just some quick background. Melbourne University Soccer Club was founded in 1967... and it's the largest senior football team in Victoria. It has 19 senior teams with 380 playing members, and interest in the Melbourne University Soccer Club is at an all-time high. It's the largest women's football program in Victoria, and it provides footballing opportunities to a diverse range of people, not just students. I think in the first quarter of 2019, we had people from, 64 different countries register with the Melbourne University Soccer Club. Our goals align with the City of Melbourne and in particular its focus for planning for growth. The biggest issue which Melbourne University Soccer Club faces at the moment is its facility capacity and to accommodate the increasing and growing population and interest in the club and playing soccer. This year we've had to turn away a large number of players and in fact up to about 200 female players just simply because the club didn't have the facilities to accommodate those players and the extra teams. So the main submissions in relation to the proposed plan and budget is that we fully endorse the plan to make Crawford Oval synthetic, and we'd submit that some further synthetic pitches should be planned for and proposed, in particular in relation to pitch 7, which is south of Crawford Oval, and synthetic for Ryder, as well as the development of Lawn 7 at Royal Park. Finally, I'd like to draw the committee's attention to the State Government World Game Fund and submit that it really would be a disappointment if the City of Melbourne missed an opportunity to access those funds and make use of those funds for the development. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Lachlan. I now call on Pauline Taylor. Pauline, to address the committee for 3 minutes. Thanks, Pauline.
Well, thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you. My name's Pauline Taylor, and I'm here on behalf of the Carlton Gardens Tennis Club in response to the Melbourne City Annual Plan and Budget, and to give our support to the City of Melbourne's ongoing commitment to health and safety and wellbeing of their customers and community, and most importantly, to talk about increased women's safety around Carlton Gardens. Our club is vibrant, inclusive, diverse and well-patronised, sporting and social. It's an important contributor to the local community. The courts are well used, and we foster this by offering free sessions to different groups throughout the week, including Saturdays for local children, and on Thursdays we have an evening which is all women of all different tennis abilities. It's supported by This Girl Can campaign, supported by Vic Health. We host social and competitive tennis events for both men and women every night of the week, all year round. The Carlton Garden Tennis Club supports the Council's plan to maintain, develop and fund item 4.12 service areas in the annual plan, particularly in the areas of safety management, ensuring people are protected and safe when accessing and using spaces, well-being and leisure, encouraging people to be healthy and active. Women's safety is a topic of unease at the moment, with Melbourne's reputation tarnished by a number of attacks and murders of women while in public parks or on public open spaces. With this in mind, the Carlton Gardens Tennis Club would like to alert the Council to the area at the north end of Carlton Gardens, bounded by Nicholson, Carlton and Rathdown Streets, particularly the area beside and to the north of our tennis courts. Fears are held for our members and guests approaching and leaving the courts after dark, and also for members of the public walking through or across the park to public transport or other service areas. Recent changes to the location of tram stops on Nicholson Street mean the access to them from the club means walking a few minutes either towards Carlton Street or back to Gertrude Street. So we've considered what we can do to help. We propose that the lights installed at the tennis courts be utilised from sundown until 11 p.m. at night. The court lighting helps to illuminate the northeast corner of the gardens towards Nicholson Street, Carlton Street, making it safer for everyone. That's what we can do. What we'd like to ask the council is to install new lighting, brighter lighting adjacent to the courts, along the pathway from the Melbourne Museum to Carlton Street, parallel with Nicholson Street. We believe the impact on biodiversity will be minimal, and with much of the northwest area of the Carlton Gardens being unlit, the benefit of added safety for women would be immediate and evident. So I thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak to you about our concerns, and we hope that you adopt this proposal to light up this part of Carlton Gardens.
Excellent. Thanks, Pauline. Question for you, Pauline, sorry.
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely. Councillor Rees.
Thanks for your excellent presentation. I know that your wonderful tennis club well and that park. I just wanted to clarify, I understand your point about additional lighting along the path north of the museum towards Carlton Street. I'm just trying to better understand your point about the lights at the tennis club itself. Yep. And do you see those lights as having a benefit beyond the tennis club towards
Absolutely.
Park lighting?
We know now that we have joggers who run around our tennis courts at night because it's bright and it's safe. Other parts of Carlton Gardens are actually quite dark, even walking from the clubhouse to the end of our courts. You know, I'll often sort of go, as someone walks up to me, it's quite dark.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks, Pauline. I now call on Jen Holling. Jen, if you're here. Thank you, Jen. You've got 3 minutes. Welcome.
Thank you, councillors, for the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm Jenny Holling, representing University of the Third Age, Melbourne City, or commonly referred to as U3A Melbourne City, which deals in the age group of post-retirement and those that are no longer fully employed at the post-retirement age. My focus tonight, unlike the sporting people that have spoken before, is education. Our ethos fully supports lifelong learning, which is part of your future plan initiative to support lifelong learning in the document that you put out. We provide about 160 classes across a number of venues, educational classes, physical activity classes, cultural activities, and more, with a huge push for social engagement, coffees and lunches after all the classes and so forth. We bring economic money and funds into the community every day. We operate from Monday to Friday, and we are very, very much engaged in allowing people to stay connected in that post-working life. Isolation, as we know, the data tells us, is a big killer. One of the issues we have, our major issue, is that venues, and for us operating in the CBD, has become virtually almost unaffordable. We are competing with everyone in the commercial space, and we need financial assistance. We operate within some of the venues that belong to Melbourne City Council, as in Ames, Multicultural Hub and others. We need to have a dialogue with you, please, to find a way forward for us to be able to navigate a more affordable classroom hire situation. So at the very least, could we start some dialogue to make this happen? Because as the prices increase for our rooms, so our offerings and services become decreased, because we simply can't afford to give our community members what they need. Lifelong learning is our big thrust. We want to support you in your initiative. So please, could we get together to make that happen? I've brought some annual reports along offering the detail of what we do. I'm happy to give it to the appropriate person tonight. But hear our call. We want what's best for Melbourne City. We're doing our best as a not-for-profit, totally 100% volunteer organisation, been operating for 34 years. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen, and I'm sure you'll hear from our Chair of People City and Chair of Knowledge City in just a moment. So thank you very much. So that is all of our submitters, unless I saw a few people come in late there, unless I'm sort of a bit of an allowance on the agenda. If you were listed to speak and you've come in late there and haven't had a chance to speak, I'm willing if you just put your hand up if you want to submit to this item. No? Excellent. So we'll now move to the recommendation, which is on screen, and I'm happy to move that recommendation. I call for a councillor to second that recommendation. Councillor Oak? Excellent. So we should say straight up that the budget of $619 million is not going to be discussed in full tonight, and that's not saying that the full array of services and infrastructure investment isn't important right across the board. This is the chance for you as community members, as ratepayers, to have your say on the budget, and it's pleasing we've got so many submissions and a real variety of submissions, not just the people who are speaking here in person tonight. I just want to address a couple of those. Obviously, the Royal Park Brunswick Club, the thanks to Thomas, Senior Nick with lacrosse, Lachlan with obviously the Uni Melb Soccer Club. There has been a strong flavour of sports and rec through the submissions that we've received. But that is grassroots community sport is what local government does and does really well. We manage a huge array of pavilions and facilities right across the municipality. you're taking into account every sport and recreation that you can think of, not to mention the passive recreation in all of the open space that we manage. But there's been a huge explosion in growth. We're very aware of that, particularly around women's sport, but right across the board. And that's great. It's a great problem to have, but we need to bring into line our upgrades of our pavilions and our sporting facilities to take account of that growth. So it's really nice that, you know, over 60 submissions are supporting that $1.5 million when you bring into account Faulkner Park in getting these designs for these pavilions done with a view to then getting on and renewing those next year and allowing things like, youth sport to really grow, to make sure that these change rooms are providing gender equity. You know, some of the change rooms that we've all visited and some of those you saw on the screen tonight were probably fine 20 years ago, but really they're not meeting today's standards. So, you know, as an administration, as a council, we're really proud to get on and get that done, and I know my colleagues are in full support of that. Pauline, thanks for your submission around the court lighting. I note that our officers are going to continue those discussions, particularly with some of those probably easy wins in terms of the lights remaining on. In terms of the sort of implementation of more lighting, that will be considered as part of the master plan, because again, it is a balancing act. But I guess probably the overarching statement is we're also very aware, sadly, of the safety issues that are presented in those dark spaces. And so, pleasingly, within our existing budget, there is a range of investment in upgrading lighting right across the board in terms of many of our pavilions and our recreation areas. So you'll see, in addition to the works already completed, quite a change in that safety and security around public lighting. As I said, the budget's $619 million. I'm not going to go through all of those items, but the response by officers, the recommendations by officers to each of those submissions are comprehensive. Some of that has resulted in additions to the budget when you consider the North Park Tennis Club, where we'll match dollar for dollar to upgrade the surface of that tennis club, and $5,000 towards a CCTV system as well. There was a submission on combustible cladding, and obviously there's been a lot of commentary on this. We'll continue to provide for our expert staff to play the role that we need to play, but we call on the federal government to act as quickly as they can, and we did so through our call to parties that this really is a national issue that needs a national solution. So City of Melbourne is playing its role in that cladding process. When you also look at some of the other submissions around beautification, some of those have been picked up. Queensbridge Square, for example, there's no major renewal works, but we'll pick that up in terms of our ongoing renewal works. And there's some more significant works that will happen down the track. I just want to address Tony's comments. He flies the flags of South Bank, as he should, but we're really undertaking one of the largest investments in history in South Bank. So whether it's Boyd Community Centre, whether it's the new Boyd Open Space, which is just absolutely fantastic, whether it's the upgrade of South Bank Promenade to the tune of $5 million, which will hugely increase the ability for people to have that open space that they can promenade along, whether that's the investment in South Bank Boulevard, which is, you know, $30 million plus, where we're going to see an alternative commuter cycle route, which will hopefully remove a bit of that conflict that we see along South Bank Promenade. So We like Tony's passion for South Bank, but I would say that we're investing hugely in South Bank, as we should, absolutely as we should, acknowledging that the City Road Master Plan has been pushed back. But it's largely these projects are pushed back because of the ongoing disruption in our city. We never want to get in a situation where City of Melbourne just plows ahead with a project without taking into account the disruption that's going on around it. And I'm confident that the City Road Master Plan will be better for it. But rest assured that councillors and City of Melbourne are well and truly supportive of the City Road Master Plan. So with that, I call on Councillor Oak as seconders to speak to the recommendation.
Thank you, Chair. I, as you pointed out, we're not talking about the whole budget, we're talking or responding to submissions. Firstly, I'd like to say I really... we haven't talked about the quantity, but I believe that, you know, the number of submissions that we've received to the budget have been higher than normal, which I think is pleasing to see. I think we could do a lot better still in how we engage with the community with our budget, but I think I'm, you know, happy that people have participated, provided their feedback, and we've received quite a few written and verbal submissions tonight. So it's good to see engagement in the multiple decisions we have to make about how we spend our ratepayers' money and other sources of funds that we have at the council. Acting Lord Mayor has already gone through a lot of the submissions, and I concur and agree, which is why I support management's responses. I think there are a couple that you didn't pick up on that maybe I'll just make a comment on to not add to your others. I note with interest the submission from East Melbourne about the beautification of the Wellington Parade Rail Reserve, and noted it with frustration. I'm on the Yarra Park, what is it called, the Yarra Park Advisory Committee for the City of Melbourne, and this issue is raised consistently and constantly, and I have tried to contact VicTrac on behalf of residents multiple times, as I know as Councillor Watts, as has Nick Francis-Gilley, as has the MCG, to try and get VicTrac to pick up the rubbish in this reserve. But it just isn't being, I don't know, for whatever reason, and I unfortunately wasn't here when VicTrac came to speak at council. But anyway, I say on record that it is still frustrating that this little pocket, this little strip of green where lots of people walk to and fro to the MCG and just in the neighbourhood of East Melbourne is still needing the rubbish to be collected. So anyway, I have on record that we've still got concerns, but yes, management's right that we don't own the land, VicTrac do, so there's nothing we can do there. Acting Lord Mayor, you didn't mention this, the proposal from Yarra Pools, but I know that you and I support the idea and the concept, and the people behind the Yarra Pools are really quite an amazing group of people from our community, and they really are, you know, pushing a great idea that we, you know, through council policy support in terms of we want the, you know, if the Yarra was clean enough to swim in, then it's a healthy Yarra, and surely we support that idea. I think that management's recommendation is correct. It is difficult to support one proposal over another, but like what we said when the Yarra Pools representatives came to FMC when we were talking about our Yarra River strategic plan and opportunities plan, that's open for consultation at the moment, that I think that's a good process for us to assess the idea of a Yarra Pools within our own strategic planning about the Yarra River. So I look forward to seeing how it comes back as part of that process that we'll be reviewing in due course. So, personally, it's not. I support management's recommendation, but that's not in any way saying that I don't necessarily support the concept of the Yarra Pools idea. In terms of the sporting facilities, I, like everyone, is alarmed by the state of the facilities, and I have visited them, but being reminded by the photos of how bad they are for so many people in our community that are using them is quite alarming. I acknowledge Acting Lord Mayor has been championing the cause to get the facilities upgraded on behalf of all of us, but clearly leading, and I acknowledge that. But I'd like to think that the next financial year, we're not just spending $800,000 to get some designs. I mean, there seems to be some improvements, but we surely should be able to get on with this year, and I'd like to think that we could at least put some doors on the toilets or something, you know. But anyway, so whilst I'm not considering or suggesting that we change what we've got in the budget, but I'd like to work with management on how we can actually improve some of the low-hanging fruit, if possible, because it's really quite alarming. University 3, I should know it. My mother-in-law is a presenter and a facilitator and gets a lot of joy in sharing the knowledge that she clearly has, and it's a great group that I've supported in the city. I think the proposal to work with management, I support not providing the money because it was a late submission, and it's difficult for us to make an assessment about an annual grant sort of on the fly, but absolutely support the organisation and the idea of working through council to find, you know, suitable space. You know, is a request that we get from a lot of groups, and something that I think council is, you know, hopefully can help facilitate a good outcome for you in another way. So I acknowledge, all of the other submitters and support management's recommendation otherwise. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Pinder? No? The floor is yours.
Really? Thanks, Acting Lord Mayor. I think this budget ticks a lot of boxes for the community. In particular, the funds that have been allocated for the development or the regeneration of Ryder Oval and the Western Pavilion is welcome. And also because it really provides an upgrade to to venues that so many different sporting groups use, whether they're the cricketers, the footballers, lacrosse players. And so I'm actually quite delighted that this injection of funds will help in this first instance, the design element of these playgrounds and ovals and pavilions. Jenny Holling, let's have that dialogue that you've so asked for, please, and I'll have someone contact you to get together. Perhaps not in this budget process, but we'll certainly work with you to see how we can see through what your requirements are for UA3. And I think in terms of aged care and seniors, the team is working very closely with the state government in respect of aged care reform and all of that encompassing all of that seniors needs and making it more inclusive. So Janet, we will, we'll look at that, and I'll I don't know that Janet Graham is here. She's probably not here. But I'll have Janet in as well and have a discussion with the team and see how we can progress some of the requests and initiatives that perhaps not in this budget process, but there might be other ways we can actually cut the cloth. So overall, I think well done to the community.
Thanks, Councillor Pinder. Any other speakers? Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Can I begin by just acknowledging all your hard work in pulling this year's budget together? I know it's a tremendous exercise, and you're ably supported by a very, very capable team led by Michael Tennants and many, many, many others. But look, I know a lot of work goes into it, so I just wanted to begin by acknowledging that. I also wanted to say I thought your response to the submissions we heard tonight was absolutely on the money and very eloquently put. I wanted to pick up on one or two points. The first was just around the Carlton Gardens and the tennis courts and the lighting of pathways there. I acknowledge the need for a master plan. Obviously, we need to see how it all fits together. But master plans can be small exercises or they can be very big exercises which end up taking a lot of time. Something like the lighting of pathways where there's a safety concern is, as I think is borrowing from Cathy Oak, Councillor Oak, is low-hanging fruit, and that's something we should get on and do as absolutely expeditiously as possible. On the point around the, this turned up in quite a number of submissions, but point around the state of facilities at some of the sporting grounds, and particularly the allowance of change rooms and facilities for both genders. My primary school daughters play soccer on the weekends at sporting fields around the city of Melbourne. It breaks my heart to think that they wouldn't be able to go on and continue playing. And when I hear that there's girls being turned away from clubs in the city of Melbourne because of those lack of facilities, that is just not an acceptable situation for us. And so, again, to the extent, I pick up again on something Councillor Oak said, to the extent that there is some low-hanging fruit, some opportunities for low-cost, quick interventions that can be made that can amend or fix that situation, I think we should be looking at them. But I also acknowledge that there's a very big investment going on that is currently being rolled out in that area. Finally, just on Yarra Pools, I concur with the ALM and the Councillor Oak on this, that unfortunately there are complications around providing funding for the business case being put forward by Yarra Pools, but I think across all councils there's very strong support for this idea, and so I think over 2019 we've got to find a way for us to be able to at least take proper consideration of that project forward.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Any other speakers? Councillor Lee Lu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and I just wanted to also acknowledge your leadership and also Michael and the CFO. It's not hard. It's very, very hard putting a budget of this size together, especially where different interests play. Just wanted to raise two things as well. I think following on from Councillor Cathy Oakes around the Yarra Pool, you know, a swimming pool Yarra, you know, where I was more looking at probably fishing in the Yarra. But, you know, if you are able to swim in it, I'm sure there will be a lot of fish in it and how exciting that would be. So it's quite exciting. It might not be the time now, but I think in the future that's something that we can definitely look at. I'm quite excited by that and driven by the Deputy Lord Mayor of the ALM and also Cathy during the discussion. It was a very lively one. The second one was around the sporting facilities. You know, I really do hope the federal government do come in as well, because I think, you know, if we're able to do something together, both the local, state and federal, I mean, that's just going to be absolutely amazing, the amount of, and also, you know, AFL and all the other sporting codes to come in as well. I think that would be tremendous. I note that we have a great history of putting up temporary things, whether or not being QVM or many other different projects. Maybe we can also explore, you know, having some temporary structures for while we're waiting for the growth of the sporting industry facilities. You know, we have the knowledge and also the technical expertise. You know, this is one area that we think we can actually potentially look at. But overall, look, I do note that today's all about the submission. I thank the many submitters who put in the hard time to put in there. I think it's great that we're waiting from lacrosse to all the way to South Yarra, you know, Resident Association. It just shows you that, you know, what a great city Melbourne is. So hopefully we can live up to the expectations.
Thanks, Councillor Lee Lu. Any other speakers? Councillor Watts.
Just an observation, really. Traditionally, local government's been about roads, rates and rubbish, but listening to everyone tonight, it's clearly about recreation too, isn't it? We really are supporting the way in which this city recreates, and I too am horrified by the dilapidation of some of our infrastructure, and I'm confident that we're very energised now to do something about it. It needs to have some money thrown at it, and we're hoping to do that. I'd also like to make mention of this tension that I detect between lighting our parks and biodiversity. The way has to be found through lighting and supporting the wildlife by keeping the women and the constituents generally safe, and I'm confident officers will move in that direction. And finally, I want to commend the presentation from Jen Holling from the University of Third Age as chair of the Knowledge City portfolio. I'm absolutely in awe of what the University of the Third Age gives to our community. I think you are where the knowledge exchange occurs between the elders and the young people to an extent. We really do have to understand the role that the ageing community plays in sustaining the city, and the University of the Third Age does this, and I'm confident that my colleagues will work towards satisfying your needs. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers? No, if not, just a quick conclusion just to add to my fellow councillors in thanking Michael and his team, but I think he'd be the first to actually say that with the public submissions process, it's right across the organisation. So every one of our branches has been responding to those submissions, and the varied nature of those submissions means that it really does touch all parts of the organisation. And again, adding to my fellow councillors' acknowledgement of the submitters. So the submissions process only works if we have submitters from our ratepayers and from people who use the city, and it does make the budget and the annual plan better. So we encourage more people to submit and to get involved in the process. It's your chance to have a say on a really significant investment in the city. So we thank you so much for your involvement as well. So with that, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Our next agenda item is agenda item 3.2, consideration of submissions and matters arising on the proposed amendments to the 2017-2021 council plan. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. If not, I'm happy to move the recommendation, which is on screen. I call for a councillor to second that. Councillor Oak. So I don't propose to speak to this item. We again work through. Don't propose to speak at length because I am actually speaking, strangely enough. But we do work through with the council plan being a four-year council plan and look at things like, you know, adjustments of timing with the annual plan itself, adjustments of timing and also wording changes just to make sure that it's making sense, and also with those annual plan initiatives, making sure that they're understood and worded as intended. So I'm happy to support the recommended changes before us. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Likewise, don't need to speak for too long, but I note that, you know, some of the important amendments are about how we measure our success or how we measure our success against what we intend to do. And so I agree with the proposed changes to make it, easier and easier to measure and also maybe provide clarity, but also a lot more data as well in separating out some of the indicators. So, I support the amendments for that reason.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to this item? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. This concludes reports from management to be considered at this special meeting. Councillor Watts would now like to make a personal statement. Council notes that the statement being offered by Councillor Watts is a personal view, and with a personal statement or personal explanation, there is no debate or reply. Councillor Watts.
Thank you. In recent times, I've become increasingly concerned about a litany of media regarding Chinese influence in various Australian governments, political organisations and officials, and in particular, Chinese sensitivity around media reporting on the events of Tiananmen Square. On June 4, I personally experienced the effect of Chinese sensitivity manifested locally here at my workplace, that is, council. This concerns me greatly. It continues to do so. I am personally affected and I feel an obligation to ensure that these events be recorded in the public realm, and this is my first opportunity to do so. Most Australians, regardless of their origins, will be aware that June 4 is a day of tragic significance, the anniversary of the 1989 events at Tiananmen Square. At the June 4 FMC meeting, my intention had been to move a simple and respectful motion concerning the tragic events of that day. Two of my colleagues had offered to second my motion, which firstly acknowledged the 30th anniversary of the tragic event, which had caused such great pain and disrupted the lives of so many young Chinese students studying then in Australia, and secondly acknowledged that we in Australia, and now they, have the privilege of living in a democracy where human rights are upheld. However, during the afternoon prior to this 5:30 p.m. June 4 FMC meeting, a series of events unfolded, sending an alarming message to Council. I believe political influence at consular level occurred, which triggered acute distress in some of my colleagues. When confronted by this distress, finally at 5:25 p.m., I was dissuaded from proceeding with the motion or with the agreed statement or a personal statement as intended. Regrettably, the anniversary of June 4 came and went unacknowledged by Council. On reflection, I know that this timid acquiescence in the face of such pressure was an error on my part, and I regret this on a number of levels. Choosing to stay silent, to in effect bow to political influence right here in our city, may have been humane or collegiate response, but it was contrary to the very democracy we hold dear. Such silence on my part and ultimately on the part of Council as a whole is a disservice to our democratic processes. Remaining silent resulted in a failure to acknowledge what had happened to those in our community granted protection and refuge within our democracy 30 years ago. This political influence altered the actions of a democratically elected councillor, in this instance, me. It succeeded in changing my conduct on June 4. In effect, it led to suppression. Such political influence manifesting as distress in colleagues resulted in my failing to act, in acting as my conscience dictated. This is not a minor matter. My sense is that this incident raises questions on the conduct of Council, and I have little doubt that such political influence will come into play in council affairs. Such political influence is not benign, nor respectful, nor acceptable in our democracy. It has to be called out for what it is when it happens, and it will happen. As Albert Einstein remarked, quote, "If I were to remain silent, I'd be guilty of complicity," unquote, and I refuse to be complicit. Awareness, vigilance and transparency are required of us all. In the interest of transparency, my intention in making this personal statement, is to ensure that this regrettable incident of overt political influence, in fact, is known in the public realm. Thank you.
I thank members of the public, management and staff for their entrance and attendance, and I declare the meeting closed at 6:20 p.m. Thanks very much, everyone.